I will call the meeting of the Sussex County Council, March 16th, together to order. And first is the approval of the agenda. Mr. Baker, have you any changes?
Yes, we do have one recommendation, and that is to delete the item health insurance bid award because we are waiting for an analysis from our consultant who is reviewing the bids, and it's not quite ready.
So moved.
Second.
Is there any other changes? If not, we'll have a motion. Ms. Deaver?
So moved to accept it.
Yes. Mr. Wilson?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Vincent? Motion carried. We have the approval of the minutes that were in your packet. That would have been February the 16th and February the 23rd. If there are no objections, we'll consider them approved.
On the 23rd, is that the day that Mr. Cole was talking about legislation for casinos? Should that be part of it?
Under what?
Remember when the folks came in to talk about gambling and casinos and that type of thing?
Right.
And then you talked about possibly an ordinance?
That's a fair point, Ms. Deaver.
It was in the past. I can't exactly remember which time. We've had a couple times where people have come in, but we were sitting here. Yes, we did it. And didn't we get a consensus to ask staff to look into it?
Yes, Ms. Deaver, I believe that was an earlier meeting.
Was it earlier? Okay, fine.
That was requested.
The minutes are perfect
as
usual.
Are we doing anything to look at that?
We have pulled the West Virginia statutes to see what they have.
Okay. At the county level, we're looking
at
different things? Okay.
There has been some question about how our policy reads with regards to directing staff to do these things. It has also come to my attention there may not necessarily be a majority consensus on directing staff to continue in that effort.
On what effort was that? We were just talking about?
Yes. That is probably something we could discuss during additional business in hopes that we could put it on the agenda for another week
Let me ask you this, Mr. President. When we get a consensus in a public session, that's the consensus. There's no other, unless we get another one in another public forum opportunity, like one of our meetings, there's no other consensus. So how can you state that there might be a different consensus when we've only had one consensus?
Council members come to me.
That doesn't get it.
Okay. Ms. Deaver, would you have anything to add?
I would like to see something like that discussed since it involves quite a lot of expense on behalf of our staff. That's all. I just would like to have a discussion about it.
Let me just point out something. We are all legislators, and we have to have the ability to introduce legislation, bring stuff forward. And anytime a member wants to get legislation, the rule of thumb, and I think when Mr. Byard was here, we had the same argument. I was asked the staff to look into something, and I found out that nothing happened because somebody in the back room said, don't do it. As legislators, and we have no staff, our staff is Dave, Mr. Moore, et cetera. So as a courtesy, what the rule is, as a courtesy, we would inform everybody and try to get a consensus and things like that. But that still doesn't mean that I can't get staff to perform something for me as a legislator. We went through all this before you got here, before the rest of y'all got here. So and it ended up, we came up with this kind of program. And that kind of what had happened, David? Do you recall?
Our rules of order does offer the ability for a council member to direct staff following a courtesy information session to the rest of the council in public session. There does appear to be a conflict with respect to how much we spend on this particular issue from Ms. Deaver as well as some other council members, myself included. At a certain point, we need to decide if it's in the best interest of the public to continue to spend taxpayers' dollars on something that's not going anywhere. How about if I ask, and this we're a bit out of order, Mr. Baker, why don't you put it on the agenda for next week?
Sure.
And we can get the information that Mr. Moore has gathered so far, and we can decide maybe as a body the direction we want to go on this very important and timely issue. Is that okay, Mr. Cole?
Well, yeah, the only thing I want to point out is when I, as a councilman, duly elected, sits here and says, I'd like to have staff do it, and there's a consensus to do it. And then I find out 2 months later that in the back room somebody said something to somebody, and it's not occurring. That, in my opinion, is probably one of the worst things we could be doing here as a public body. So my assumption is that when we get an agreement to do something, it's going to get done. So I don't think we need to have a – there's only five of us. And for us not to be open enough to know that if one of us has said, let's do something, and there was an agreement to do it, and then I find out that it's not getting done, that can make you mad. I don't think that's appropriate and proper. So I think you got to understand, as a legislator, our staff works for each and every one of us. If there isn't consensus to do it, and that legislator still wants to pursue it, I think that they have the right to do that. Because you can't, you know, you can't stop government. You can't, you know, the power of the minority. There is the minorities in Congress and here even in Sussex County have the ability to do things.
Mr. Moore,
and
were you
that stipend?
Mr. Moore, were you directed not to do anything?
No one had said anything to me.
Well, your implication was.
Assumption was that somebody did something behind closed doors, and you know what happens when you assume. Let us vote.
You just told me that people have come up to you. We're not gonna.
And that's why we're discussing it today. It happened this week, Mr. Cole.
And put it on the agenda.
Mr. Cole.
Yes, sir.
I think that what happens here, sometimes we bring things up, sometimes enlightening people here, and then we get phone calls because we do answer, like the staff answers to us, but we also answer to our constituents out here and people that we represent. Gives us phone calls,
right,
and try to point our direction that maybe we were wrong or maybe we ought to take second thought about decisions that we're making here.
Okay.
And sometimes I pick up the phone and I may call you or Mike or any one of you and say, this is what I'm getting. What are you getting? What the people are saying. So that's what I think that's what Vance might be trying to say here. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think that's what we're.
Then Sam, sit here the next time you get an opportunity, bring it up. And see if you can get a consensus to agree to whatever whatever that phone call told you to do. Bring it up. We'll talk about it. We'll move forward. I have no problem with that.
Sometimes it's not worth traveling any further with it. Sometimes just let it go.
Well, that's fine. That's your decision. But I'm just saying, when there's a consensus to do something, I think there ought to be an assumption that it's going to get done.
Yeah. Well,
that the staff is working on it, not to find out that behind the scenes somebody has slowed the process or done this, because I have certain expectations, and maybe other people have certain expectations.
I agree.
We don't get anything.
I agree. If it's consensus here, so we need to find something out, I think it should be pursued. I have no problem with that.
Okay.
In light of the discussion, I'd like to accept a motion to accept the minutes as approved.
Yes.
Second.
I have a motion and second to approve the minutes. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. I have one more question on this procedure, the idea of procedure, how we proceed with suggesting ordinances that might be written by staff in order for us to consider at a hearing.
I'm hoping Mr. Baker would put that on the agenda for next week. I think it's a word.
About procedures?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I would like to talk about how we go about getting staff to write an ordinance that we think is very important and should be considered by the people at a hearing.
Very good. This is what happens when you take 2 weeks off, folks. Mr. Baker, you'll put that on as well. Mr. Moore, reading of correspondence.
Yes, Mr. President, there's several items. The first group of correspondence are in the way of thank you for contributions that were made. The first one is from the Gumborough Community Center Association, thanking the council for their efforts in support of the community playground equipment. The second is from Children and Families, thanking the council for their $2,100 gift to support our Resource Center program. The next one is from the Ronald McDonald House, thanking for their help and support of the house that Love built. And the next one's from Catholic Charities, thanking for the council for the generous donation of $1,000, which will help them continue the work of serving others, and the donation will be used to benefit the Casa San Francisco. The next is on behalf of the Delaware Blue Hens 12U baseball team, thanking for the effort to assist with their youth. Next is from the Delaware Nature Society, thanking the council for their $1,000 in support of the scholarship fund at Abbott's Mill Nature Center. Next letter is from Delmarva Power, and it is from Jim Smith, Senior Public Affairs Manager, and it's in thanking the county for all the help and superb leadership during the recent back-to-back snowstorms. They value their relationship with Sussex County Emergency Operations Center and all the other agencies. And the last letter is more lengthy, and I'm going to read this one. And it is to David Baker from the Sussex County Paramedic Association. We are writing in response to the recent newspaper article citing funding concerns for the paramedic program in Sussex County. The Sussex County Paramedic Association is greatly concerned by any funding costs proposed by the state as they will adversely impact patient care. We're fully aware and sympathetic to the financial crisis affecting local, state, and national agencies and the need for budget cuts to help offset the crisis. We are imploring county and state leaders to understand the implications those proposed cuts to the paramedic system will have on the residents and visitors to the state of Delaware. In Sussex County, we have 8 strategically located paramedic units to help minimize response times. Sussex County Administrator Mr. David Baker alluded to the possibility of reducing staff by 2 to 3 paramedic units should the state reduce their share of funds. This equates to a 25% to 33% reduction in service in Sussex County. Current national standards and the Delaware Emergency Medical Services System Improvement Act of 1999 call for an 8-minute response time on 90% of the calls. In 2008, Sussex County EMS met that standard 50% of the time with 8 strategically located paramedic units, and that is roughly a 10% improvement from 10 years ago. Statewide, we have seen a dramatic reduction of trauma-related injury and death by 25%, due in part to our much-needed growth in current staffing levels. Annual call volume over the past 10 years has increased by nearly 30%, which has required Sussex County EMS to add units and stations to meet the demands of the increased call volume. Sussex County's changing demographics have necessitated relocating certain stations to achieve mandated response times and deliver the service our community deserves. In the year 2000, we responded to 12,904 incidents. In 2004, we responded to 13,803 incidents. And in 2008, we responded to 17,526 incidents. Current data and projections show that our population has increased and will continue to increase. Reducing our funding could result in slower responses, drastically reduce the level of service we are able to provide, and adversely affect the quality of life for all our citizens. Over the last 5 years, the state has reduced their share of our funding from 60% down to 30%. This is unacceptable as the state and Sussex County have an obligation to their constituents to provide a service, and that service is in jeopardy. The Sussex County Council has been doing their best to keep up with the state's shortfall, and it is time for the state to step up to the plate. The SCPA supports Sussex County EMS in its commitment to improving the quality of life of all Sussex Countyans, but we can't do it without the support of our state legislature. The Sussex County Paramedic Association strongly urges the legislature to adopt a 50-50 cost-sharing process or alter the real estate transfer tax formula to allow more funds to go to the counties. Any less would be a disservice to all Delawareans. Respectfully, Gabriella Evans, President, and Lars Granholm, Vice President, Sussex County Paramedic Association. And that concludes the correspondence, Mr. President.
Thank you. Does any council member have any correspondence?
I do. I have 3 items that have come from folks who live at Prime Hook Beach. One is from Mary Waters from Milford, of course. Jim and Melanie Hoff of Milford and Albert and Rose Cavalieri. Instead of reading them word for word, I'll just read the first paragraph because they're very similar. This is the first paragraph of one of the letters. I'm writing to inform you about a very serious issue that exists for our community at Prime Hook Beach in Sussex County. We hope that you can find resources to help us. Our community has one road of entry and exit, Prime Hook Road, which runs through Prime Hook National Wildlife Refuge from Route 1 to the Delaware Bay. This road is currently being physically eroded by tidal water on both sides of the road. I forwarded these to DelDOT and DENREC as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other correspondence from council? If not, Mr. Scott Thomas.
Hi, can you hear me okay? County Council, thank you for carving out some time on the agenda today. My name is Scott Thomas. I'm here joined, I'm the Executive Director for Southern Delaware Tourism, the Convention and Visitors Bureau for Sussex County. I'm joined by staff member Aubrey Manzo and board member Julie Wheatley. And it's my privilege to be here today and share with you some things we've been up to in local tourism. So just let me get started by, again, reestablishing our mission, which is to support and encourage the identification, development, and promotion of sustainable year-round tourism in Southern Delaware that contributes to economic growth and improves the quality of life. The office works closely with Sussex County Chambers of Commerce, the two other Delaware County Convention and Visitors Bureaus, the State Tourism Office, and other regional tourism organizations along the Delmarva Peninsula. In doing so, we work constantly with our Sussex County tourism partners that make local tourism tick, our hotels, attractions, and event organizers. Tourism is big business in Delaware, and it starts with Sussex County's coastal resort region that draws 90% of the 7 million visitors per year to the county. This translates into $750 million in direct annual tourism sales. In addition to direct sales, local tourism business transactions have an economic multiplier effect of 2.2. So for every dollar spent by a visitor, $2.20 is injected into the local economy. In addition, tourism sales contribution to the state and local tax base saves each Delaware resident approximately $600 in taxes annually. The county has a tremendous tourism advantage being located within a four-hour drive of 25% of the U.S. population. Sussex County is home to some of the best and cleanest beaches anywhere, in a region populated by charming small towns and friendly and hospitable people. This is our tourism anchor that will spur future economic growth across the entire county. With this in mind, I would like to share with you some recent local tourism initiatives that Southern Delaware Tourism Office is pursuing. The first one focuses on culinary tourism. Food travelers are spending $1,194 per trip party, and they represent 17% of the American leisure travel market. The campaign we launched last year in May of 2009, entitled Come to the Culinary Coast, Life Tastes Better Here, showcases the county's density and variety of restaurants, farmers markets, wineries, breweries, culinary events, activities, specialty markets, and hotel packages. The other area of focus centers on cultural and heritage travelers who are on a never-ending quest in search of authenticity. This group of travelers spend $994 per trip party and represent 78% of the American leisure travel market. Sussex County, as we all know, is loaded with authenticity and compelling reasons to travel throughout the county. Most of these reasons are linked to three areas: maritime, agriculture, and religion. Our goal is to create and promote a collection of countywide trails that connect these spots that link to interest-driven itineraries, where local businesses, attractions, and recreational points are highlighted. This project aligns itself with other visitor-centric projects, such as the developing scenic byways on both sides of the county, and the soon-to-be-launched Captain John Smith Nanticoke River Water Trail, just to name a few. The Southern Delaware Tourism Office is also committed to working with the State Tourism Office and implementing its initiatives focused on sports marketing, meetings and conventions, and group tour. Economic development starts with a visit. It's kind of a slogan we like to use in the tourism world. Everything starts with a visit from officers of business and entrepreneurs. For instance, a person visiting on leisure with his or her family may want to return here for a meeting with business colleagues in the fall or even in the spring seasons, or seek out a location here for his or her business. A family will prioritize their only vacation, especially in this economic climate, around sports travel to watch their son or daughter compete at a sports facility, such as Sports at the Beach, which happens to generate $25 million annually into the local economy here in Sussex. Future facilities accommodating this type of travel, be it sports, meetings, and conventions, will harness year-round tourism. We also listen very closely to what visitors are saying and what they're watching, and we try to respond to them and what they're writing about in the ever-increasing groundswell we know as social media. In our 2009 visitor survey, more public transportation options were the number two request behind limited parking. We firmly believe that future bus and bus-to-rail projects will answer to this demand. We also want our visitors promoting Sussex County to other prospective visitors. We don't want to be the one telling them to come. We want our visitors who have already been here telling them about it. Therefore, we've invested in creative platforms such as a travel blog entitled Host Our Coast. We're very excited to be launching our second season of this, which we just have 34 finalists selected as of midnight last night to compete to become the travel journalist for the Delmarva Peninsula. One of those entries, by the way, happens to be an Academy Award winner, which is pretty interesting. So we're looking forward to selecting that winner as we get closer to our season. But that's just an example, again, of creating platforms where we can get our visitors involved, where they can showcase their experiences here in Sussex County. We also work and cater to travel journalists who are our power advocates that promote Sussex County to their readership and viewership. For instance, we'll be hosting an outdoor Writers Association conference this weekend, which will bring approximately 25 to 27 outdoor writers to our region, where they'll be hooked up with some of our local celebrities and businesses, where they can really come and see firsthand everything we have to offer from an outdoor standpoint. So all this, there's a lot of exciting things happening right now. And the reason I'm here today is just to bring the council up to speed with kind of where we're spending our time and energy. And we also ask for the county council's support in these initiatives. And to keep what I've just said in mind when you're examining current and future projects in the county. With that, I conclude today. And if there's any questions or anything else, I'll take a seat.
Of course, I'd like to know if you're working with the Milton Theater.
Yes.
Are you?
Yes.
Good. Wonderful.
Yes. Yeah, Libby and Ellen Passman, who's a past board member, we've shot some local video there, and I certainly want to. It's such a vibrant point to downtown Milton. We want to showcase it.
Very much.
It.
Yes. Good.
Any other questions?
What's the writers writing about?
The writer. Well, for instance, we just had a regional travel writers conference here last year, and this was in May of 2009. What they're writing about, that one conference generated, I think, 22 and growing stories, writing about a lot of the maritime heritage, the Dutch history and the influence that came here, where they showcased towns like Lewis, the history of shipbuilding that plays into that takes you along, that connects towns from Lewis to Milton down to Bethel. They're writing about outdoor activities, our fantastic recreational outlets and guides, everything from surf fishing to inland locations like Trap Pond State Park, the tours involved there. And we always like to link everything back to the hotel packages, because in the end, we want people to stay here more than one day, hopefully 2 or 3 days.
Where do you get the number $600 saved these taxpayers? How's the tourism do this?
I get those numbers through the Delaware Tourism Alliance, which is a statewide organization, which takes into account the public accommodations tax and what that brings in to the state and how that leverages against all other tax revenue sources. So I don't have the sheet here to break down. I'd be happy to share that with you, though.
I'd question that.
Okay.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
Mr. David Baker.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. The first item we have is a legislative update, and this is a continuation of a topic that was discussed on February 16th at the County Council meeting regarding a proposed legislation regarding dogs. At the February 16th County Council meeting, Mr. Pat Emery from DENREC, Department of Fish and Wildlife, requested that the County Council consider supporting a bill that would, from a housekeeping standpoint, transfer some of the state law provisions regarding dog control from Title VII to Title IX. And Title IX is the section of the code that pertains to county governments. The proposal from DENREC would also transfer the responsibility for handling dangerous dogs to the counties. And as you know, currently, effective January 1st, we are responsible for stray dogs and then, of course, licensing dogs. Kent County SPCA is in support of the proposed legislation and has agreed to handle this responsibility as part of our contract without additional cost. A few changes have been made to the proposed draft legislation as was suggested in February. First, one of the changes was that fines collected would be sent to the counties instead of some of them in the original proposal would be sent to the state, and that change has been made. One other change that has not been made, but I think is the state would agree to, is dog wardens. There's a section in there that says that dog wardens must be full-time employees who cannot have other jobs, which is an antiquated provision, and we're not sure what was the origination of that, but they agreed that they would change that so that it would not reflect that they could be full-time or part-time and hold other jobs if they want. And we also have been assured that the Attorney General's office will handle prosecutions for dog control as needed, because they are the prosecuting agents, I guess you could say, for state law, and I know Mr. Moore has taken a look at that. So with that, I'll introduce Mr. Pat Emery, who is here again today, to make for further discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Baker. Good morning. Again, my name is Pat Emery. I'm Director of Fish and Wildlife, and I'm member of the government, and I'm here to help you today.
I got my pockets fastened.
There you go. I knew Mr. Wilson would have something definitely to say. We had a discussion with Mr. Moore. I want to say a couple things. I have Bob Phillips as well with the AG's office with me. And I think Murray's here from somewhere back in the back with the SPCA. Again, as we discussed last time, basically what this is a transfer of dog control over to the counties. And it happened last year, as you're well aware of, in part, but there was quite an amount of it, for some unknown reason, that didn't get transferred over to Title IX. So we're trying to take care of that portion. I mean, really, the nut of dog control is the dogs running at large, and for some unknown reason, that portion wasn't transferred. So needless to say, that's all been taken care of. I don't think Bob assures me as well as others, and I've looked at it myself, I don't think we've left anything behind at this point. There is one little aspect, though. The dangerous dogs, as it's called, at one point in time, that was one of those things that we said we would keep. As I told you last time, there was no mechanism put in place for us to have a funding source associated with that. And it's not a tremendous funding source. It's been averaging about $400 every time we have a dangerous dog panel, and that comes from the court stenographer. Now, we pulled some records out, and I gave these to Dave as well. Sussex County only had one case relative to dangerous dogs last year. So, needless to say, you didn't have a lot of dangerous dog cases that required a substantial amount of funding. We had 14 dangerous dog panels across the state, though the vast majority of them were up in New Castle County and the city of Wilmington itself. And talking to Mr. Moore, and I think we brought this conversation up as well the other day, there probably could be a cost savings, or last time I was here, a cost savings associated with the court stenographer, if you go ahead and tape it, and if it's deemed necessary to go to the next step and actually go to court, those records could be basically taken care of, and somebody can go through them and actually print them all out. So that would save you a substantial amount of money. And again, as I told you before, we do have some additional money associated with licensing that we'll be transferring down to you all that's residue, so to speak, left over from the transfer process. And I can't remember off the top of my head what that number was, but I told you what it was last time. I think, was it 20-some thousand, Dave?
Yes, $29,000.
$29,000. I told you last time when I came, I'd bring you a check, but I didn't do it.
Yes, so. I was looking for that check.
Yeah, we'll get you a check. It's in the mail. Uh-huh. No, needless to say, it will be coming down here to y'all. We'll bring it down. So if there's any questions about this, it's pretty self-explanatory. We've tried to do whatever we could in working with the counties. If you had any questions, as Dave said, some of it was somewhat antiquated, the particular law relative to a dog ward not being able to have another job and had to be a full-time position. It was something old. There's no problem with changing that at all. And that the modification associated with the actual transfer of the fines, that was a misnomer on our part. It wasn't any intent on our part because it was left in there from before it was under our total control. So we went ahead and transferred that, and it changed it into the county in which the offense occurs. So if it happens in Sussex County, you all get the money. So that's about it in a nutshell. I don't know if you all got any questions. I'll certainly try to answer them. If not, Murray's here as well as Bob, and we can see if we can answer your questions for you.
Mr. Cole. Yeah, Pat, I got one issue still, and I brought it up last time, and I've had a couple notices of some of our complaint department, all the stuff. They said we ought to bring it up, and I agree. The complaints I get when I get calls, because a lot of people
dogs.
Who move in here from outside of the area and down in the resort areas or second homers and what have you, retirees, their complaint is nuisance dogs being, barking dogs at nonstop and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen is they're going to, once people find out that now dog control is at the county level, the complaints are going to be, to us and to our staff. And when we have to tell them, we're not doing anything about nuisance, barking dogs that bark 24 hours a day. They're not going to be real happy campers down here in Sussex County. And we put a lot of emphasis to dangerous dogs, and there was only one case, big deal. Dogs running at large, I know there's, in the past years ago, there was a lot of that. I think a lot of that's curtailed. People are more responsible with the dogs. But the barking dogs, where people just let these dogs, they're tied up, we need to address that. And the bill, without addressing that, we've still got, not a good package here, I believe. And so I don't know if it would be like after three complaints or, some kind of mechanism to deal with them that we can, send somebody out and address this issue. So,
You want me to go ahead and answer that, Ms. Deaver? Or?
I don't know.
Well, I have the same problem. A lot of constituents are complaining about barking dogs. They think dog control means control of dogs who are barking all the time. So,
I understand what you're saying, and I do agree with you about the issue associated with barking dogs, how many complaints you all probably are, people that we get. But the bottom line is, the bottom line is Bob Phillips will answer
your
question.
Good. All right. Save the man.
Bob Phillips, I'm a deputy attorney general who assisted in drafting this legislation.
Okay.
I would like to note that under this version of the legislation, the counties have the authority to draft their own ordinances, which you could use, and you could use that authority to come up with a barking dog ordinance.
My question would be, why couldn't it be included in this, and then we only have one ordinance that we have to deal with? Maybe we've got this one state ordinance, and aren't we using that as our
Well, I think that because there may be different standards of when people want to enforce that, there is right now on the books a noise regulation that creates an offense, a regulatory offense, not a violation of statute, for a person who allows his or her dog to bark intermittently, I think for 30 minutes, or constantly for 10 minutes, but it's quite difficult to get a police agency to enforce that.
Right.
Because they would have to come out and actually time the dog, that sort of thing. Each of the counties may want to do that differently, and I think this would allow the counties flexibility to do it however they choose.
Mr. Phillips, following up with that, would, if the county then drafted its own ordinance for that, the county then would be charged with enforcement of that and prosecution of that, would it not?
Well, I would imagine that that would be done mainly by a fine that could be mailed in, such as a traffic ticket. And I don't know that enforcement in the terms of, in the sense of having a prosecutor have to try a case would really arise.
Interesting.
I guess we got to measure how loud the bark is, how many barks.
It gets pretty complicated, Mr. Wilson, yeah, I'll be honest with you.
And after all, we do believe in freedom of speech, don't we?
Well, not everybody, Sam, lives out on a big farm and surrounded by a bunch of barnyard animals that are, you know, peacefully walking around.
It's not my fault, George.
I understand. But I'm just saying a large majority of the people do have this issue. And as the years have gone by, I mean, anybody who's been up here will attest to that. That's the complaint. It's the barking dogs. And so you're saying the state doesn't want to address it in their ordinance.
Yeah, the state has no plans of addressing that, Mr. Okay. Cole, but it's entirely up to the county if they want to go ahead. Basically, what we set a threshold here. Okay. Anything you want to do over and above that's entirely up to you. But this is the threshold for dog control.
Yeah, I was hoping you'd do it up there at the state level so I wouldn't have to try to convince Sam Wilson.
I won't comment on that
one. It's probably easier to get the state law amended than to have to convince Sam Wilson of something to do something.
I've known Mr. Wilson for a long while, and I won't comment on that one.
All right. Well, you know then what I'm faced with. The difficulty.
Miss Deaver.
Yeah, Mr. Moore, he talked about a noise regulation. Is that on the state level? Talking about a regulation at the state level?
The NREC has something,
it's,
right?
It's a state level, yes, ma'am.
Okay, so that could be made to apply to this, could it not?
Yes, and there's also regular nuisance statutes that you have that anyone could go to JP court on a nuisance.
So we already really have.
No, we don't.
It's not
really
specific concerning. No. That is not specific concerning dogs.
No, it is not, and
it's not.
It would not come under that. Dog complaint would not come under those.
No. Okay. Someone could bring if it were just if it were constant. Someone could bring a nuisance action, but they would have to prove that. I've seen people have that in JP courts. You know, go in with a nuisance a complaint. But all of these are difficult, whether the county enacts an ordinance, as Mr. Phillips indicated, you know, how do you enforce it? You get into situations, mm-hmm. Do you have to go out there, listen to the dog, time it? You know, how often would you have to go? What constitutes that nuisance? How do you draft that? It becomes difficult at that point.
But it's been done.
It's
been done in other jurisdictions, and I'm sure a little plagiarizing could figure out something and bring something together that might work here. And it should be complaint-driven, obviously. But a fine structure, I think what he's talking about is probably.
I cannot imagine that you would want to impose jail time on anybody.
No. The dog on the dog, we might want to, but not on the people.
I think George is referring to something like that. He doesn't get along with his neighbors.
Mr. Baker, you are looking for the sentiments of the county council tonight?
Yes.
Today? I guess before you, we'll go ahead and read the motion. If you've got one, we can discuss it.
Okay. If the council was interested in supporting this recommendation from DENREC, be it moved that the Sussex County Council supports proposed legislation to transfer Delaware Code language regarding dog control responsibilities from Title VII to Title IX and add dangerous dog responsibilities to county governments.
And the definition of a dangerous dog is what? Is there a definition? Does it have to bite you?
There's a definition in here.
Would that be, say that dog runs inside your car and demolishes your car, would that be dangerous?
No, I'm just saying if the dog, if it's just a barking dog, can appear to be vicious or dangerous, but 16. How do you go out? I mean, the same problem I'm having with trying to address barking dogs, I think they're going to have a problem addressing vicious dogs unless it actually bites you. Does it have to have a bite?
The statute defines dangerous dog as any dog declared to be dangerous by the dangerous dog panel I'll get to that. I'll get to that.
You're here to help. That's right.
Right. Right. And then you have to go to that definition to see under the circumstances under which a dog could be declared dangerous, and those are the dog killed or inflicted physical injury or serious physical injury upon a human, killed or inflicted serious physical injury upon a domestic animal, which is also a defined term, includes any dog, poultry, or livestock, not cats.
The cat lobby is going to be a little annoyed with
Well, it was something that was attempted in the last General Assembly. They did not want to prevent dogs from chasing cats.
But how about killing cats?
That's cat control. They got to have cat control.
they didn't want that either.
They didn't care about cats.
But again, I suppose you could adopt a county ordinance to adopt that also. continuing on with the dangerous dog definition, it's essentially an animal used to facilitate animal cruelty or animal fighting, as alleged in a separate criminal complaint, which are both, animal cruelty is a felony, and I believe animal fighting is also.
But, yeah, being cruel to animals doesn't mean the animal's dangerous, though, does it?
Well,
I mean, I'm just, okay, it's a confusing definition.
If it's trained as a fighting dog,
gotcha,
then it would be a dangerous dog, and you could prosecute the owner for animal cruelty and or animal fighting. So that's the definition
of
dangerous
dog. Thanks for clearing
that
up.
Who's on the dangerous dog panel?
Sam Wilson.
You got a 5-member panel on there.
Under the current statute, yes.
Yeah, and what we're looking for is that each county would have a representative that would make the decision on what the makeup of the dog panel would be over a period of time as those individuals either get off or pass away or whatever it might be.
So there's a state committee to pick the committee?
Not currently, no. What we're saying is through this legislation, there would be a committee, a panel committee, selection committee, one from each one of the counties. So you select an individual that would take care of who decide who's going to be on the panel. And the panel, I got to put my glasses on for this. It's one's a licensed vet. One has to be a member of the American Kennel Club. One has to be an animal behaviorist specializing in the treatment of canine behavior. One's a police officer, and one's a representative of the Delaware Society for the Prevention of Cruelty of Animals or the Kent County Society for Prevention of Cruelty of Animals.
So we have to find those kind of people?
No, they're already in place.
They're in place.
Okay. Everything's in place. All you'd be doing is taking it over. And what you would do is you all would select an individual and there's from each county, and as something would happen here where one of these people would step off the panel, they would make the selection. It would be a majority rule type thing.
Are they volunteers or are they paid?
They're volunteers. They're paid the compensation associated with mileage, but I'm not sure. Murray's shaking his head. Nobody has. So they do it as they go.
How often do they meet?
Well, there were only 14 hearings in all of last year.
Yeah.
So, you know.
They may have more than one hearing at a time, right? Or
well, not on one day.
Not on one day.
I don't think that's ever happened.
Okay.
But we're talking 1.1 hearings per month.
Mm-hmm. So if
something
we adopt,
like
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Ms. Stevens.
If we were to adopt this, then the person that we appoint would be involved in some of those hearings up in New Castle County, up in Wilmington area, is what you're saying?
No, the idea is, and perhaps it's not too clear in the statute, the idea is that the counties would select a representative to nominate people to serve. It's sort of like the Electoral College is.
That's probably the best way to look at
it. The analogy I came up with, whether that works for you or not, I don't know.
Maybe that isn't a good analogy.
That's a good
system.
Anyhow.
Yeah, right.
I can see why we had to have a lawyer to make this law.
Oh, yeah, I'm still, yeah. Every dog I look at now, I'm going to look at differently.
All right. We have one more opportunity to discuss this if there is a motion and a second to approve. You've read the motion, Mr. Baker, I believe?
Yes.
Was there a second?
I would just say I have the feeling we'll probably have to do something at the local level because this seems so typical, you know. I don't know. It's just a lot of, right, of paperwork coming from the state mandating us to do something, and I think we're going to have to probably fine-tune it. And we can do that, you're saying. We can.
That's correct.
Yeah, there's a specific provision in the statute that allows the counties to adopt their own ordinances.
But we can't strike any of those. We're stuck with those. We can do something over and above or
correct.
Or
if
less
you want to make
basis.
It stricter, you can, but you may not be do less than this, yes.
Okay.
Help me understand what happens if we don't do it.
Don't adopt it?
Yeah.
No, state law require it. We got to do this, right?
If it's passed by the General Assembly.
Well, exactly. I mean, I guess you can say to a certain extent, I'm coming down here on bent knee to make you aware of the fact that there's certain portions of dog control that haven't been transferred to counties that should have been last time around. So I'm trying to get everybody's buy-in on the different county levels to say, you know, here's the situation. Now, it's going to be up to the legislature whether they pass it or not. You all might decide to say, hey, we want it, and they might say, well, we're not going to pass it. But
So our vote today is kind of giving the green light to the General Assembly to pass it.
Exactly.
I haven't spoke up. I'm not really interested at this time to give them that green light because I do see it as an unfunded mandate. I know that there's elements that would provide us a little bit of compensation based on fines and things. That's my opinion. I probably won't vote for it today, but I'll certainly entertain a motion to consider.
Yeah.
You'd like to make a motion to approve today? Is there a second?
No. To your statement.
To defer today.
Right.
Mr. Wilson would like to defer this today. Is there a second?
So we're just taking no position is what we're saying, basically.
If we defer, correct, yes.
Defer this.
And is it, the time frame on this is what?
It's the time frame is immediate. I mean, in order to get this through, we've held it this long. We've made it all the modifications that we had so far. And as you know, session opens up today.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to move pretty quickly on this thing to get it through this year.
It could move through the process without our vote. And,
exactly.
But you're suggesting that may get passage
and you,
a little less.
And they'll also say that we've been made aware of what's in. It's not like we've been blindsided. You have come down and made
that's the reason
aware
why I came down to
right,
tell
I
you.
Know, I appreciate
I mean,
that.
I didn't want to blindside you.
My only comment would be I'd love to see something done with nuisance dogs because that's where I'm going to have all the complaints. When I do get a complaint, it won't be about a vicious dog. It won't be dog.
And you certainly can take that upon yourself as the council
to
take
that.
Care of that.
I have a motion on the floor to defer this issue. Is there a second?
Second.
I have a motion and a second to defer. Any discussion?
Well, just a passing comment.
Yes, sir.
And I agree with deferring.
Okay.
But I think to think that if we don't do anything, they're not going to pass it. They darn sure gave us $700,000 we didn't ask for last year. And that costs us money. This costs us nothing. So it's going to pass for sure. I'm done, but whatever.
Mr. Baker, while we're discussing this, do we have anybody qualified in the county to maybe really dig into this ordinance and see if we can make it better and we actually offer our version? I mean, we've not gone through this thing line by line yet, have we?
Well, Mr. Parker is here, Mr. Holloway, and myself, and I think Mr. Moore read through it. One of the other options is that to support the housekeeping version of the bill, basically to bring over what the General Assembly has already indicated is our responsibilities without the dangerous dog portion of the and that's there was a version without the dangerous dog early on. And that is an option. We have looked at, we have tried to review it in-house as best as we could. But, again, we are new in the business, so we're not experts on this.
Yes, and Mr. President,
Mr. Moore.
I've examined the statute, and I looked at it. Matter of fact, had a teleconference, as Mr. Emery has indicated, but it's from the standpoint as to the prosecution and the payment of the fines and to make sure that the state would be charged with any prosecution of the matter, which I'm convinced that they would be charged with, and that the payment of the fines as drafted now would come to the county, as Mr. Baker had indicated.
Okay. If there's no more discussion on the motion to defer, I'll take the vote. Ms. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Vincent?
Yes.
I vote yes.
Motion
carried.
Thanks for coming in, John.
Thank you.
Appreciate
sure.
Mr. Baker?
Yes. The next item is an update on our tax and sewer and water amnesty collection program. And I do have a handout for you that you haven't gotten before. We are pleased to announce that the Treasury and Utility Billing Divisions have collected about $1.2 million in delinquent tax and sewer bills as part of the month-long amnesty program. We collected $797,258 in delinquent property taxes, which includes school and county property taxes, and $394,741 in delinquent sewer and water bills for the county sewer and water districts, which adds up to almost $1.2 million. This was collected from approximately 3,969 different accounts, which are now up to date and not delinquent. And this also saved taxpayers about $86,000 in penalties, which represents one half of the charges for penalties that we collect. We did receive $60,452 in penalties on property taxes and $26,017 in penalties on sewer and water charges. And we would like to especially thank the county council and each county school district for supporting this initiative, as well as our county staff, including the Treasury Division, Utility Billing Division, Data Processing Division, as well as our new collection manager, and Susan Webb, our finance director. And I know some of them are here today. If you have any questions.
Yes. Mm-hmm. How much is outstanding at this point?
A lot.
Okay. On property taxes.
Did 8 million?
Total taxes receivable are approximately $9,372,000. About $7.9 million of that is for school taxes, and there's additional penalties on outstanding amounts of $4 million. So, mm-hmm. And you add all that up, it's about $13 million. And the sewer and water district figures, I don't have the actual accounts receivable as of today.
And are we doing anything about that? I mean,
Yes, we have. We are continuing efforts. For instance, our collection manager has worked up a form that we use for payment plans. We're becoming more uniform in how we do this, and encourage people to make payments on their property taxes or outstanding sewer and water bills. Mrs. Bennett, our director of the Treasury Division, was out at the West Complex this morning for several tax sales. So we are taking some properties. We are selling some properties, and it's sort of a last resort thing, but we are doing that. We are continuing using the constable's office, and our collection manager is working together with Utility Billing and Treasury Division. Of course, both of those offices have made many efforts to over time to collect property taxes.
One of the other things that our collection manager did come up with was that while we had this amnesty list to send a special letter just to them, the highest offenders, warning them that here's your opportunity, you know, take advantage of getting a reduction in your penalty. Pay your taxes now, because these are the next measures we will be taking. Okay. So it kind of zeroed in on them very seriously to let them know, give them a heads up that we're serious about collecting.
So of that $13 million, what would you say, what percentage is school tax? About 80%, or is that
84?
Okay, fine. I'm just going over these.
It looks like the amnesty program brought in about 6% of the total that's okay. Due. I think it's the consensus of the council that the administration begin to take some very aggressive
yes.
steps.
Drive on.
You know, yes. I took a lot of heat from some members of the public for offering the amnesty. And when I explained to them that our our interest rate was 18%, and they were still paying 9% interest, they cooled down a little bit because they thought maybe they were getting away scot-free, and they weren't. But at this point, the window has closed, and it's time for us to be very aggressive. We don't want to throw people out of their homes, but it's just not fair to the rest of the public who is paying their taxes on time. I mean, they're experiencing the same hard times as everyone else. So,
are we going to start with the worst offenders and move down the list that way?
I believe that's maybe what Susie was suggesting.
Yeah, we have different approaches. We have those that are the top offenders. Many of those.
Not amount-wise, but length of time? Or
we have both. I mean, we're going to tackle it from the length of time on the tax sales and more direct on the top offenders, which are your bigger dollars, direct mailings and letters.
Mr. Moore, don't we have a fiduciary responsibility to collect the school taxes anyway?
Absolutely.
It's another state mandate, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
No, it's legal.
Yeah. All right. Anything else, Mr. Baker?
Just the administrator's report. Oh, Bonnie Smith just gave me a note that sewer and water outstanding balance is about $1.6 million.
Okay, thank you.
Water off, I bet they soon find out they hadn't paid their taxes.
Yeah. The first item is on the county administrator's report is paramedic competition results. As per the attached press release, Sussex County paramedics for the fourth time since 2005 won a medal at the GEMS Journal of Emergency Medical Service Games in Baltimore on March 5th. The team, including paramedics Michael Cornuccio, Jeff Cox, Stuart Hensley, and Jill Wicks, received a silver medal amongst 18 different teams from across the U.S. In 2005, Sussex County paramedics earned a gold, followed by silver medals in 2006 and 2009, as well as a third-place finish in a separate international competition in 2008. We wish to congratulate our Sussex County paramedics on this award, reflecting their high-quality service to our residents. Sussex County surplus auction report on Saturday, March 13th, the county auctioned 12 surplus vehicles as well as 8 generators for a total amount of $39,350. We believe the auction was very successful in raising over twice the amount of funds that we expected. Approximately 100 people attended. We wish to thank the County Sheriff's Office, Sheriff Eric Swanson and Tina Timmons, as well as Mr. Hal Godwin, who organized this first-time event. I don't know if Mr. Godwin wanted to make any comments or not at this time.
Any questions for Mr.
Godwin? I got a question. Why can't county employees participate?
County employees were actually making decisions about what vehicles or equipment would be for sale, and then at the same time, those employees could go and purchase equipment. So that was the conflict.
The person
basically
who makes the decision for surplus vehicles would be just the department heads, right? Pretty much, or?
I'm just wondering. We can look at that in the future in terms of other employees, but we had
that gives the illusion of conflict too,
perception.
Need to be.
It is if it's bought not by not being put in that public arena of the auction. The auction, there's not a fairer way to buy something than an auction. And if county employees want to participate, I don't see any really problem in it, unless you could, like I said, allude that there was some individual takes a brand new vehicle and puts in the auction. I would think somebody would pick that up, like a guy like Hal Godwin. I would think somebody goes over the list and checks off that yes, this is a surplus item. And so I really don't see the potential conflicts. I just hate to see county employees not maybe be able to participate in this.
I agree. If you do it,
do you know what the policy of the state is? They have their auction every.
No, I don't. We can find out about that.
I look at that would be
next,
the only change I would
next
think.
Time, yeah.
I mean, unless you have a real good reason, I'm assuming.
There's two things I would change. That would be one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that public auction is whoever's standing out there wants to bid on that car, regardless who he is, if he's got the money, he should buy it. It's for everybody to look at. And images, I don't know where you can get a bad image for bidding on a car. If I want to bid on a car, I don't know how I could got a bad image on being on a car, other than I just try to run our return back up, getting more money back for the county. Number two, I believe that I go to sales all over the country. I buy most of the time with a check. and most people knows me. If they don't, I can have a letter of credit or a certified check or anything. It does not have to be cash. I do not walk to sales on a tractor $30,000, $40,000. I didn't walk up with $30,000 in my pocket, cash money, to pay. And I may not even bought the tractor to start with, so it's kind of foolish to go draw all this money back out. So I think this county can take a check, and on Monday morning, we can go cash that check. If those checks all go through, then somebody can show up after 9 o'clock, pick up their keys, and give them their keys to the car. Our checks are done, passed, everything's credit through. So it's a lot of unnecessary work for these people.
So you're saying you think more money, we raised $39,000, maybe somebody didn't want to walk around with $1,000?
It's a possibility, may not have that much cash on, or whatever. A lot of times, I sometimes don't really go to buy. But if it's a buy, I sometimes bid. I don't have that kind of cash. I got a check out.
Right. Hal, maybe that's
check.
Both those areas.
I did that.
You did what?
I did what he explained. I took one check after I explained. At the opening of the auction, I explained that if someone bid on a vehicle at a higher price than they had in cash, that I would take their check under that policy, holding their keys, title, and vehicle. Until Monday, we had one person give us a check and came into the office first thing Monday morning, created the check, and got his keys, his gold sale. We did that.
So Mr. Wilson is suggesting that be disclosed in the advertising in the future.
Right, because it said cash only.
Right.
Right. What I was trying to prevent was someone from some distance away, perhaps a car dealer that might be having financial problems that we're not aware of,
yeah,
writes us a check for a half a dozen cars, takes them back to Baltimore or wherever, the check bounces and the cars are gone. I was trying to prevent that situation from happening.
Well, we could restrict it to out-of-state checks would not be accepted? Or
we could say if you intend to use a check, you'll need to make arrangements with the county prior to the sale.
Or bring a letter of something or
yeah.
Whatever. Okay,
I think we do need to make some kind of a policy
yeah.
on checks and put that in our advertisements in the future.
I know, Hal, that I've gone in, I've got people give me checks, and some are good and some are bad. And we go to the bank to cash this person's check in order to not be held up, not counting on it being good. We said, especially if we got a question, we said, is this check good? They got computers on it, and in 10 seconds they tell me that check's no good.
Just also credit cards.
And so if we're holding the keys and we got the car on the parking lot, we can certainly still handle that easy enough.
True. It's just more time that we'll have to spend.
But it's better.
Into you Monday was I took 20 pieces of equipment and turned you over a pile of cash on Monday, so you got paid for everything. And that was my ambition. My ambition was to be responsible in releasing the county assets.
Well, I'm not criticizing you. I was there. You did a good job. Probably got as much money for it as we could have got. Mm. But the point is, I think it's a little easier for
I agree.
A lot of people came to me and said, well, why don't they take my check? Some of those people I would have took their check and ran with it, been glad.
And as I told you Saturday morning, I wouldn't have any problem with a local check at all.
Sure.
I was just trying to keep us from getting in trouble with someone.
You tried to correct the situation.
Right.
That was the first time. I think it was very successful.
Absolutely.
I think.
Good job.
See what
yeah.
works.
No,
I think I'm not criticizing. What I'm trying to say is let's so we can get this advertised and get these things corrected
and
let it be known that we're.
I think we learned several things Saturday. I think we learned that we can do these sales ourselves. I think we learned that we can keep the commissions rather than paying out a commission for an auctioneer.
Mm-hmm.
We have staff that are capable of doing this. Myself and the sheriff have a whole list of staff that were involved in this. It took weeks to bring this together and quite a strategic plan that worked very well, I think. As a matter of fact, mm-hmm. the cars I had appraised through the Kelley Blue Book system at $10,051. We got $23,000 for them.
Good.
So we got over 200% of appraised value on the automobiles. Mm-hmm. So I think we've learned a number of things from Saturday, and the check policy is one of the things we've learned.
Mm-hmm.
But check maybe in credit cards? I mean, I'm just thinking that.
Then I've got to have an electronic terminal and swipe.
I would think, don't we have something in this?
Butch Emmerich takes.
I think checks would be. Yeah. I think checks would be good. I think we just do it with checks.
Well, whatever.
Anybody in business or anything should have a checking account. My goodness.
Get us the policy well in advance of the next sale. We'll give our stamp of approval, and I think it's a good idea. Thank you, Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Mr.
Gobble. Anything else, Mr. Baker?
Yes, National Flood Safety Awareness Week, the week of March 15th through March 19th, is known as National Flood Safety Awareness Week. An educational emphasis of this week is on flood insurance. Most homeowners' insurance policies do not cover flood damage. Flood insurance through the National Flood Insurance Program is available from local insurance agents. Also, a link is available on the county's homepage as, in addition to information on the noted website.
It would be interesting to find out if that insurance would cover loss of your septic in case of these floods people are having. I wonder.
I can't answer.
There's a lot of them aren't working right now. Well, I see the fields in the county right now.
Next is County Building Code Department newsletter. Attached is the first newsletter from the Sussex County Building Code Department. The goal of this newsletter is to keep contractors, designers, and building professionals updated on the building industries and code-related items. We wish to thank Mr. Andy Wright and his staff in the Building Code Department for their work in developing and distributing this newsletter. Workshop, Bridge to a New Position. Attached is a schedule regarding workshops being held at the Greenwood Library March 16th and March 23rd, pertaining to resume writing and consultation help for those who are searching for a new employment position. The workshop series began on March 9th at the library. Airport Committee meeting. Attached is an agenda for the first meeting of our newly appointed Airport Advisory Committee to be held at the West Complex on Tuesday, March 23rd at 7 p.m. This committee is appointed by the County Council, will advise Council on airport-related matters. And then finally, Delaware Department of Transportation, DART Public Hearing Workshop. Delaware Transit Corporation will hold a workshop on March 22nd from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. regarding paratransit service in the county. Workshop will be held at the Easter Seals Building. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Baker?
Okay. That means tonight, Mr. Baker. Airport means tonight.
23rd.
Oh, tomorrow?
Yes.
Next item is
I'm always, that's why I say
Ms.
something.
Gina Jennings, Director of the county.